Well, today I want to do what I might regard as a part three, the last two messages that I gave, the one in December and the one in January, had quite a bit of interest, so I thought maybe it would be good to put the capstone on the subject and speak today about something that is commonly talked about in the religious community, but with it there's a lot of, can we say, not, I don't want to use the word confusion, but uncertainty as to exactly what is being talked about. I want to talk today about the individual that is well known in the religious community as the Antichrist. Now, we know that there are two major players in the end time power structure that is going to come to play as the countdown to the second coming takes place. The question is, who is the Antichrist? In the evangelical world, and that would include the Adventists, for sure the Baptists, I know of them personally, the Pentecostals, and many others, in their prophetic scenarios, they always refer to the Antichrist. Do we know who that is? And I'm not talking about a specific name. I'm talking about the role that a particular individual is going to play in the end time events. And their key actions as the, what we call the beast power, forms. We need to keep in mind that there are major players described in the book of Daniel and book of Revelation that have to do with this particular conglomeration of political and religious forces that are going to come together to create what we know as the beast power. That's the term that the scriptures use for it. But we need to keep in mind there are several players, there are several descriptions, and they're not necessarily as distinct as we might want to think. They sort of blend from one into the other. For example, we've got the dragon spoken of. We've got the church spoken of. And in some places it uses the term whore. And we've got the civil beast. And the other individual is called the false prophet. That's the term that scriptures use, that evangelicals identify as the Antichrist. But is that a correct identification? Let's keep in mind the term that the scriptures use, the false prophet. Many times, the false prophet is the one identified as the Antichrist. And I expect we've heard that from many, many different sources. And it's kind of an assumption, I think, on the part of people who look at the prophecies that God gave us about the developments that are going to occur just prior to his return. But is the term Antichrist even a biblical term? Because actually it isn't used in that context at all. Now, there is mention of the spirit of Antichrist, and that's way back in Paul's day. But it wasn't identifying an individual necessarily. And that's the distinction that we need to keep in our mind. When we use the term, or when people use that term, who are they referring to? Is it the beast or is it the false prophet? Which one is the Antichrist? Prophecies identify two significant individuals in the end time beast power. But there's no one that I know of that espouses a two-person Antichrist. So the identification has to be of one or the other. The typical take is that it's the religious figure who is the Antichrist. Problem is, when we read the prophecies, it's hard to stay focused on the question because in so many cases, the narrative blends from one into the other. And you have to keep your mind clear as to who it's talking about. And we'll see that as we read some passages here. But what we do know is that there is a two-component symbiotic authority. And what do I mean by that? It's an authority structure where one entity promotes and provides the power for the other. And the other reflects back on the motivating power and gives it its power and authority. So it's a hand-in-glove situation. But there is a distinction between the civil beast and the religious beast, which we refer to as the false prophet, as scriptures do. God made a clear distinction between the two. However, there's not a lot said specifically about the false prophet himself. At least it would seem that way. But hopefully today I can add some perspective on the subject. It's the civil beast who is going to claim the most high status. He's going to imagine himself as the supreme deity. And we can read of that in Daniel chapter 11. I don't want to go there. I don't have it in my cheat sheet, so let's go to Daniel 11. And it's about verse 36. It says, "And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done." This is not the religious individual that's doing this. It's the civil beast. And that's going to be an important component as we get further into this subject. But the question is the Antichrist the religious figure or the civil figure? It's a surprising answer when you look at what the scriptures actually show us. And we see some of that right there in Daniel chapter 11. It's the religious individual, the false prophet, who is the spokesman for the other. He's the promoter. He's the power broker. And we have to ask, what position is he in where he can influence nations to a political outcome? In other words, to motivate what is being done, he's got some authority in a certain area where he can elevate the status of the civil individual. The religious one is the promoter. He's the spokesman for. He's the one who enhances the esteem of the other. And that's important to keep in mind. I would say it's quite likely that both of these individuals are alive today. But being a false prophet leaves us to identify the civil individual. He fosters a worship culture. And we can read of that in Revelation 13, where it says, "And he does great wonders." This is speaking of the false prophet now. "And he does great wonders, so that he makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceives them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he has the power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he, and again still the false prophet, had the power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Very revealing passage of Scripture. But it shows that the false prophet is the power behind the civil. However, the civil is going to come out with more authority, and he's going to reflect back on the false prophet and give him his power and authority to do what he does. One of the things being to persecute Christians. But it's the civil beast who will be the one to put himself above every god. The false prophet is the one that fosters a worship culture. Revelation 13, verse 12. That's what we just read. Okay. Revelation 13. And over Revelation 13, 4. All of this gives us a picture of what is going to be taking place. Now, here's another figure in the picture that we don't always consider. In verse 4 it says, "And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" So we can see that there is a political figure that is being empowered by the dragon through the false prophet. Now, in Revelation 17, we have a very revealing passage of Scripture. I'm going to begin in verse 1. "And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, Come here, and I will show unto you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters." Now, here's another component in this picture. There is a religious institution. And what is the relationship between the religious institution and this false prophet? Many evangelicals and so on, and even ourselves in years past, have identified the head of the, let's say, the Bishop of Rome as being the false prophet. My assessment is that no, the false prophet is even above that institution, and I'll explain why as we get into this message a little further. But he says, "Come hither, and I will show unto you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit unto the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns." Now here we're looking at the political structure. However, keep in mind what's going on in the background. Verse 4, "And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman." And we understand this is talking about the church, not the false prophet per se. "The beast that you saw was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. And here is the mind that has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Now, there have been a comparison with Rome having seven hills. I don't think the identity of this particular religious institution is in question. But in verse 10, there are seven kings. Five are fallen. One is at the time. And the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue for a short space. We understand that to be the seventh restoration of the Holy Roman Empire. Not Rome itself. Not the Roman Empire. This is after the Roman Empire fell, and it was restored as a political power. It will have been restored seven times by the time we get to this point. Now, here's a key in verse 11. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth. Keep that number in mind. And is of the seven and goes into perdition. And the ten horns which saw are ten kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but received power as kings 1 hour with the beast. We spoke of that in the last couple of messages. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. They are going to coalesce as a single power. Ten separate political entities are going to coalesce together at the behest of the false prophet working behind the scenes and the dragon working behind him. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. In verse 15, and he said unto me, the waters which you saw where the horse sits are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And the ten horns which you saw upon the beast, these shall hate the... Now here, we're coming to something very important. The ten horns which you saw upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God has put it in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree, and to give their kingdom unto the beast. That's what they're going to do to begin with. Until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And the woman which you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. So keep in mind, there is a religious institution, a pre-existing religious institution, and it's pretty well identified, that is going to be the base upon which the false prophet builds his influential position. But he is not them necessarily, and we can see that where it says God is going to put it into their hearts, and that's the ten kings, to destroy the religious institution. Why would they do that? Why? I pose to you that the reason why the beast power would want to destroy the major religious institution that is in this world is because of their moral sense. You see, when the beast elevates himself above every god that there is, who proclaims himself as the highest god ever, even higher than the god of gods, that religious institution is going to balk at that. And so the beast power is going to be compelled to destroy that religious institution. And you can read of that in Revelation chapter 18. So the religious institution is going to be destroyed, but the false prophet lives on. And he's promoting this beast power that is proclaiming itself to be higher than God himself. Can you see why they would do that? Now, something else happens. Three of those kings are somehow going to be demoted. Why that is, we're not told. But three are going to be sidelined somehow. They're going to be taken out of the mix, leaving seven. And then this little horn that he's called, the false prophet, is going to move in and join himself to those seven, becoming the eighth. So that's the point that we need to realize, that the false prophet, the individual of the false prophet, is going to continue on in power and authority even after the religious institution is taken out of the picture. Now that's pretty serious. But it's important that we realize that the false prophet is not necessarily who we have thought historically. He's going to use the long-established church structure as a platform for his credibility and for what he's going to do. But the false prophet is particularly an end-time phenomenon. He's going to be rooted in a long history, but he is going to be above that institution. The false prophet is not particularly relevant outside of Christian society, and that's something else we need to understand. It kind of helps us identify who he is. He is going to emerge from within an established entity. That's where his roots are going to come from, but he's going to rise up above them. He will give the Pope instructions. The Pope in this picture is not the supreme authority that we might think. Not the supreme authority that he has been throughout history. He's going to give the Pope instructions. And we already have that. If you've been watching world news, if you know what's going on in the world, there is an authority structure that is behind the scenes and that is shaping politics and religion as we know it. It will come out more and more, but we need to be aware of that. A similar tactic is going to be used here in these last days. There's a relationship between the false prophet and the ten kings. This individual has no equivalent in history, although perhaps there's a prototype for him. That's another factor entirely. The church has crowned European kings for more than 1,000 years. Who crowned Charlie III? The Archbishop of Canterbury at Westminster Cathedral. Can we see the place? Even the Protestant world has its equivalent, but it's that greater religious institution that anoints and crowns kings of Europe. They've been doing that for hundreds of years. But there's going to be an eighth who arises and joins himself to the remaining seven. And he's going to move into position, and the other seven are going to accept it. Now, whether this is before the religious institution is destroyed or not, it's hard to say. But he is going to move into position. Let's look at Daniel chapter 7, verse 8. I considered the horns, and this is talking about the original ten, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. This is going to be the situation up until the point in time when Jesus Christ returns. We see that in verse 9. Let's go to verses 24 and 5. And these ten horns out of this kingdom are ten kings that shall arise, and another shall arise after them, and he shall be different from the first, and he shall subdue three kings. This is an important development. Why it is? We can only speculate, but we know that it will happen. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given unto his hand until a time and times and the dividing of a time. We understand that to be the final 3.5 years. So the false prophet is going to join himself to the 7 remaining kings and become the 8th. And he is going to pretty much influence what they say and think and do. The thing is the false prophet who we thought he would be as the head of that particular religious institution, or will he reign above it? And there's evidence that he is actually above that. And we can see that in what he does with the 10 kings. And basically, according to God's will, is going to entice those 10 kings to destroy the very religious institution out of which he came. But he is going to survive. And we can read that in the concluding verse of Daniel chapter 11. And this too is revealing. Daniel 11, verse 44, I'll start with. But the tidings out of, and this is after the beast power has set up his military headquarters in the Jerusalem area. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and to utterly, to make, make away many. This is describing the Battle of Armageddon. And he shall plant the tabernacle of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. Revelation 17, I think, is the one that tells us that the beast and the false prophet will be captured after the Battle of Armageddon and cast into the lake of fire. So we know that the false prophet survives the destruction of that religious institution, which tells us he is above that religious institution, and that's what we need to understand. The question, though, let's go back to where we were here. Is the Antichrist, as the religious world teaches or uses the term, is the Antichrist that religious individual, the false prophet, or is he the civil beast? By the fact that the civil beast promotes himself to be a god above gods, the false prophet isn't doing that. It's the beast who is. So if we're going to apply the term Antichrist to anyone, it should be applied to the civil beast, not the false prophet. And that's a distinction. That is a difference from what you're going to hear from the evangelical community. Now, another question is, which of these two institutions will persecute the saints? Because we know that's part of the picture as well. Well, just by the fact that they want to destroy the religious institution, and I would say as a result of their moral objection to what the beast is doing, that the false prophet is a distinct entity from the political structure of that religious institution. The church will balk at the obscenities. And they pose a risk of turning the people against the beast power. They can't have that. They can't have that. His gross actions and presumptions of super divine claims, that's too much for even a corrupted church structure. They'll balk at it. And there will be a period of time that we know as the end time martyrdom of saints. This is where that particular activity takes place. God will put it in their hearts to destroy her. They're going to burn her churches. They're going to destroy her institutions. And that will spill over, I'm sure, to the saints of God, which are going to be even more vocal and even more motivated to recognize the false claims of this person who's claiming himself to be higher than God. But it's the beast and the false prophet who will be taken after the Battle of Armageddon. It's Revelation 19. I've got ahead of myself there. Revelation 19 that tells us that. Verse 20. This is describing the Battle of Armageddon. Verse 19, and I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. This is the returning Christ. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and them that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive into a lake of fire, burning with brimstone. So the false prophet is going to continue long after the religious institution that he had used in the past is destroyed. But the beast and the false prophet will be taken alive after Armageddon. God has given us a great deal of information about the events that are going to take place in the very near future. We should have the picture in our minds. We're not terribly specific in all areas, but let's keep in mind the drift. There is a power structure operating in the world that is above the elected people that we know about. We see a lot of evidence of that. You can't even run for office in this world if you're not pre-approved by that behind-the-scenes power structure. Imagine what would happen if somebody from the outside were to come in and run for office who is not part of that elite power structure behind the scenes. Oh, wait a minute. We have that, don't we? Huh. Same thing is happening in the religious community as is happening in the political community. It is forming. It's behind the scenes. Don't be surprised when what happens, happens. Daniel chapter 12 wraps it up very nicely where it says, the wise will understand, but none of the wicked will understand. So we need to be familiar with the scriptures, with the prophecies that God has given us. They are amazing. They are detailed. They tell us what's going to be happening, and they give us the long-term outcome. And that's what we need to be aware of. Search the scriptures, because they will give you perspective to know how to deal with what is going to happen.